From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, those open lines, here's what's happening. Sad story out of Florida tonight. A veteran Florida zookeeper known as the Tiger Whisperer has died after she was mauled by one of the big cats in her care. Stacy Conweiser, she's 38 years old, was pronounced dead at St. Mary's Medical Center in West Palm Beach, where she had been rushed there. A 13-year-old male tiger that was not being exhibited when it attacked Conweiser, and the public was never in danger. However, the zoo was placed on lockdown, and about 25 guests were told to barricade themselves in a gift shop just as a precaution. The spokesperson says that Conweiser was inside the tiger habitat, which is closed to the public, preparing for the zoo's daily tiger show. It was not immediately clear what caused the tiger to attack her. A jury has convicted a Dallas area doctor of fraud for selling his signature to possess almost $375 million in false Medicare and Medicaid claims in what investigators called the biggest home health care fraud case in the history of both programs. Microsoft is suing the government over a federal law that lets authorities examine its users' email or online files without their knowledge. It's the latest conflict between the tech industry and U.S. officials over individual privacy rights. Now, law enforcement officials want freedom to view a treasure trove of information, including emails, photos, financial records that customers are storing on electronic gadgets and in so-called cloud computer centers. Let's check in with Lauren Weinstein about this one. Well, this is an interesting twist, Lauren. What's your take on it?
Yeah, it's interesting timing, too, because it comes right in the midst of all of the current battles between Apple and the government, which are continuing, even though that original iPhone running an older version of the operating system has apparently been cracked by hackers that the FBI hired. That's what we're being told. Later versions won't be vulnerable the same way, so this will be a continuing controversy. And in fact, there's already an iPhone apparently in New York that's the subject of new litigation. So, you know, Microsoft, I think, is kind of taking, you know, looking at this situation and saying this is a good time to take advantage of people's interest in this, and so this is a good time to file this lawsuit. I have my doubts that it'll get very far, because the underlying problem here is that the Electronic Communications Privacy Act, the ECPA, which is many years old now, wasn't designed to protect people's data in a cloud-oriented environment. It didn't really visualize so much of our data being in the cloud. So ultimately, the solution to this would be to rewrite those laws to take care of that. Unfortunately, we see many parts of Congress now going in the opposite direction for less privacy for ordinary people. So there's no telling where this is going to go, because we have these counteracting forces for privacy and against privacy, and it's all centering in Congress. There's something I wanted to mention. There's an interesting advisory from the Department of Homeland Security.
Oh, really? What is that?
Yeah, that just came out. It has a lot of people scratching their heads a bit. One of their cyber readiness teams is basically saying that they suggest that anyone running Microsoft Windows completely remove QuickTime from their computers. And apparently there are some vulnerabilities that have been found, that have been discovered, and there's no intention right now of them being fixed. So they're saying, to be on the safe side, you should remove QuickTime entirely. That would mean going into your programs and features in Windows and then going through the list of installed programs and doing all of that. We'll probably learn more about this. There's no reports of this actually having been exploited in the wild yet, but I think anyone running Windows probably should pay special attention to this as more information about this QuickTime vulnerability comes out.
Okay, we'll watch this. And Lauren, you let us know when we should pull that trigger. Two powerful earthquakes a day apart shook southwestern Japan, killing at least 29 people, trapping many others beneath flattened homes and sending thousands of residents to seek refuge in gymnasiums and hotel lobbies. An apparently uninjured baby was miraculously pulled from underneath the rubble of a collapsed home in Japan. They've had more aftershocks than you can imagine out there. I mean, really tense. Andrew Taylor has spent the last 100 days consuming nothing but potatoes, plus a beer now and then, and he's really happy about it. Quite a bit lighter, too, a quarter of the way into his challenge to eat a potato-only diet for 1 year. The 36-year-old man says he's lost 70 pounds and experiencing fewer episodes of clinical depression. It's an amazing story there. What else is going on in the skies these days? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Hey, Peter, what do you have for us this week?
Well, good evening, George. You know, I have to preface by saying it's no longer the UFOs themselves that flabbergast me. It's the fact that things can go on, the likes of which I'm going to report tonight, and they never make the press except on coast to coast. It's just an amazing phenomenon. Going back to last Saturday night in Louisiana, it's either Kretz or Krotz Springs, K-R-O-T-Z. Group of eight people were sitting around a picnic table camped on the levee of the Atchafalaya River. I hope I pronounced that one correctly, too. They became aware of a very bright, solid light behind some broken clouds. In very short order, that light started strobing, but strobing in an irregular fashion. So it caught their attention immediately. They broke out an infrared night vision device and looked at it. Suddenly, the flashing, strobing lights became solid, and the object just streaked to the northwest behind the clouds. Very, very interesting report. And it comes from a solid witness, a gentleman who spent his whole life as an emergency responder. He submitted an excellent report that's posted to our website tonight. The next night, Sunday, the 10th of April, Corning, Arkansas, you may have been there if you've ever driven south out of St. Louis, up in the very extreme northeast corner of Arkansas. Two adult males were driving at 10:30 at night. They saw two objects streak across the sky. They saw them for only about 8 to 10 seconds, they estimate. They were bathed in blue light, distinctly blue light, George, which rules out any kind of terrestrial aircraft.
Hmm.
They can't have blue lights on them. It's illegal. Violates federal laws, you probably know. And as they were watching them, the larger of the two that was in the rear, the larger one was a distinctly triangular craft with three lights in each of its corners, each of the triangle apices. And it suddenly jumped forward to approach the smaller one. The blue lights went out, and both objects went streaking off into the night. At about the same time that that was taking place, up in Calgary, Alberta, two people were in a tank, I don't know what you call them.
Humvees?
They were soaking in their jacuzzi. That's the term I was searching for. And they saw a bird-like, a triangular bird-like craft streak over their heads. Saw it for only a couple seconds. They were scanning the sky, hoping it would come back, which it did. All told, they saw it three times, going back and forth across the sky. What it was, we'll probably never know, but an interesting report. Tuesday of this week, the 12th of April, Wilson, Kansas, a son and his father were driving south. They were driving from Indianapolis down, I think, to Texas, but I'm not sure of their destination. Wilson, Kansas, they saw seven distinctly yellow lights that were overtaking their car as they drove at highway speeds on the highway. They drove a little ways further, and they ran into them again. What makes that report so interesting is 20 minutes later, in Ellsworth, Kansas, a bunch of people, several observers, saw a cluster of maybe as many as 7 or 9 red objects. Very interesting reports. Both of those locations, Wilson and Ellsworth, Kansas, are within 20 or 25 miles of one another by my measure. Very interesting combination of reports. And finally, a report from Lansing, Michigan tonight, George. In fact, two reports in rapid sequence. Truck driver called the hotline to report a cluster of, he estimated, 13 orange lights headed to the northwest. Shortly after my conversation with him, we got a written report from a group of people who must have seen the same things in Lansing, headed, as they described, to the northwest. It's been a very, very busy week. We just updated our website.
Great.
And if people would like to read the rest of the story, it's posted to ufocenter.com.
Have you seen the movie The Fourth Kind, Peter?
I have not yet.
Okay, you've got to watch it. It has to do about a case, a series of disappearances in Nome, Alaska. And, you know, I'm sure Hollywood has embellished that movie, but it's supposed to be based on fact. But at the end of the movie, they go to little snippets to kind of wrap up the movie, and they have a truck driver calling, and the phone answer person says, UFO Reporting Center. And I was just wondering if you ever got any calls about UFO cases in Nome, Alaska.
I will watch for those. People can answer that question for themselves on our website, but I will look that up. I'll send you an email, George.
Okay, you got it. That's Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Up next, George Washington. Did he have ghosts? We're going to check in with Joshua P. Warren as we go live to Puerto Rico next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back to Coast this Friday night and this Saturday morning. Nothing like it. Joshua P. Warren, our special guest for a couple hours, noted author, researcher. He is one of the greatest paranormal investigators out there. And tonight we're going to be talking about some strange paranormal events that has to do with the White House and presidents. And let's check in with the man himself, live in Puerto Rico, Joshua P. Warren. Hey, Josh.
Hi, good evening, George.
So how are things in Puerto Rico?
Things are beautiful here, as always. You know, I've been bouncing around the states quite a bit. I'm here in Puerto Rico for a little while before heading back. And, of course, as you well know, pretty soon I'll be going to my hometown of Asheville, North Carolina, because we have a big event there, George.
August 27th. We'll talk more about it as we get closer and closer, but I'm really looking forward to this, Josh. This is going to be great.
You're going to have a huge turnout. You have a lot of fans there in the mountains of Asheville, North Carolina, and people who just love the mysterious and the unusual. But here in Puerto Rico, of course, I have been continuing to take in tons of reports of strange activity from around the world. And this time last year, I was in Washington, D.C., doing history's first formal report on the Abraham Lincoln ghost photo. And, of course, you were kind enough to play the audio from that entire report on Coast to Coast AM.
I remember that.
And you know, George, I tell you, it just took off like you wouldn't believe. The Huffington Post picked up the story. It got covered by media around the world in various languages. I was contacted by a television show in Spain. And so the great news is so many people out there became aware of my work with that photo that I now have become a focal point for new data coming in regarding presidential ghosts in general. And that's why I am excited to break here tonight on Coast to Coast AM for the first time in national media that there is a new photograph that has been taken that just may show us for the first time ever the ghost of George Washington. And before I tell you the details about how this photo was taken, anybody listening can visit coasttocoastam.com and see this photograph. And I hope that when you do that, you'll also click the link for enhancements and more info to joshuapwarren.com. And, of course, there's no period after the P. If you go to joshuapwarren.com, you can see different enhancements and blow-ups of this thing. George, this is a photograph that was taken on Sunday, December the 6th of 2015 at 6 p.m. by a woman named Lisa Molden. Now, she's an author, actually, who studies the presidents. And she was at a tavern in Annapolis, Maryland, called the Middleton Tavern. Now, this is a building that has been active since the year 1740. It's actually been an inn since 1750. And this is a place that was frequented by all of the founding fathers, but especially George Washington. In fact, the Freemasons used to meet there. And, of course, George Washington was a very prominent Freemason, which we can talk more about. And she was at a table in an area where people had seen the ghost of George Washington quite a bit. And as she was waiting for the waitress there to fix the bananas Foster, she snapped a shot. And you can see, George, that standing off to the right of the photo is this very dark silhouette. It's a profile of a man who's walking off toward the left side of the frame. He seems completely out of place. And in fact, I was happy to find out that Lisa had control photographs. She had photographs taken before this and after this so we could do an analysis and compare. My team and I looked at this photograph. We ran it through every filter you can imagine. We looked at the metadata from the original. And when you compare this to images of George Washington, and you also look at the people who have seen his ghost there, and you sort of combine all this information together, I really believe this may actually be the first photograph of the first president of the United States in spirit form.
That's weird. Why is he hanging around?
Well, you know, that's a very interesting question. And I've always been intrigued with the connection that some of these presidents had to the paranormal and to the spiritual when they were alive. It seems like some of the presidents who were more kind of paranormally sensitive have a tendency to stick around in a ghostly form. So first off, let's look at George Washington's life. Well, George Washington, again, he was a Freemason. Now, my museum, the Asheville Mystery Museum in North Carolina, is in the basement of the Asheville Masonic Temple. It's a very haunted building. And a lot of the rituals in Masonry contain a spiritual sort of sense. And that's because that in order to become a Freemason, you're required to believe in a power higher than man. So that's interpreted by most Masons as some kind of a spiritual being or a supreme being. And George Washington deeply believed there was something greater than man. As a matter of fact, he became a Mason when he was just 20 years old. Throughout the years, I mean, he was one of the largest enthusiasts out there for Masonry.
He sure was.
During the War for Independence, most of his trusted generals were Masons. At his first inauguration to be president in 1791, he took his oath of office on a Bible from St. John's Lodge in New York. In retirement, he became the charter master of a lodge in Alexandria. He sat for a portrait in his Masonic regalia. He was buried with Masonic honors. And, of course, he also presided over the Masonic cornerstone ceremony for the U.S. Capitol. So he was always very interested, I believe, in the spiritual side of life. And furthermore, there's an incident that I've always been fascinated by regarding George Washington. In 1755, when he was 23 years old, he was fighting in the French and Indian War, and he was serving a British officer named Braddock, and his group was ambushed by French and Indian soldiers, and they were just being destroyed. But for some reason, this fearless George Washington was riding around on his horse, trying to rally these men who were dropping left and right all around him. His horse was shot out from underneath him twice. And when all was over, he had four bullet holes in his jacket, but nothing had wounded him. It was as if he had a force field around him. And so I think George Washington had a great deal of faith that there was something greater, something more mystical about his role in society, and this idea that there was some kind of a spiritual force looking over the United States. Well, now, of course, we are in this tumultuous election year, and we can dig more into that as we discuss this further. But I believe that because of some of the things that are happening right now politically in the world and the place that we occupy historically in our society, that George Washington and Abraham Lincoln And even John F. Kennedy and some of these presidents who played key roles in the development of our country are sort of on the edge of their seats, and they're wanting to see if we make some good decisions at this very critical moment when we have the technology to either go do wondrous things and explore outer space and become closer to a type one civilization like Michio Kaku was always talking
well,
about.
Well, we never know. Josh, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment as we talk about George Washington, the ghost. Welcome back to Coast with Joshua Warren. He is live in Puerto Rico. We're talking about the paranormal, obviously, right now about George Washington, his ghost. Didn't George Washington have a prophecy of a coming invasion of the United States or something from an angel, Josh?
You know, I'm glad you brought that up because for years I believed that that was true. It pops up in literature from time to time. However, when you actually start tracking down the source information regarding that story, it seems like it might have been a work of fiction. And that's because during the Civil War, both sides were trying to make it look as if they were operating with the blessing of the founders and the blessing of the forefathers. And so there was a lot of propaganda being written supporting both sides. And at that time, of course, it was not so easy to verify the source of certain stories. And so there was one writer who just sort of popped up out of the blue saying that he met a soldier who was 100 and some years old who knew George Washington, who claimed that this was true, and used this as sort of an inspirational and patriotic piece of literature to pump up people in support of the North, I believe. But unfortunately, there is nothing that directly relates to George Washington's life that proves that. He didn't write anything in a letter along those lines. Nobody who knew him ever directly mentioned it. What we can say, however, is that George Washington, aside from being a Mason, he did attend church. He did write about the importance of prayer. And I think that it's clear to see from reading the Declaration of Independence, which has references to providence and divinity at least five times, that all the founders did believe that there was something there to sort of divinely carry the United States forward. Of course, the most famous being, you know, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. And if you consider that, that kind of message, and you also consider that these guys who fought the revolution were very intelligent, rational, pragmatic people, when they sat down and looked at the map of the world and saw how much of it was dominated by the British Empire, the most powerful foe imaginable at that time, and how absolutely unlikely it was by any stretch of the imagination that they, this more or less broke ragtag group of country bumpkins, could defeat the British Empire, you realize there's no way they could have even tried to do that without having faith in a greater power, believing that this was a destined mission, believing that there was a God or a supreme being supporting them, because, hey, just based on the statistics alone, there's nobody who thought they could win that thing.
You know, the ghost of Washington has got to be pulling his hair out, his locks, with the campaign that's been going on this time, huh?
You know, that's a great point, because when you look at some of these presidents that seem to have met with tragedy or have had some special connection to the paranormal, we're always looking at what they have in common if there are certain cycles that they're working within. So, for example, we've all heard about the connection between Lincoln and Kennedy, all these weird coincidences.
Yes.
And you know what? Most of those are true.
VPs with the same name, Kennedy's secretary was a Lincoln. Everything was weird.
Oh, you know, both presidents shot in the head on a Friday, seated beside their wives. I mean, yeah, I've got list in front of me. It's a 2-page list of amazing coincidences. You know, after shooting Lincoln, Booth ran from a theater to a warehouse. After shooting Kennedy, Oswald ran from a warehouse to a theater, et cetera, et cetera. And so people are very aware of that. But if you go back and you start looking at other presidents and how they relate, I think that you start to see some interesting cycles. So, for example, let's look at George Washington. George Washington, of course, was the president who was there to spearhead this idea of a free nation. And it's kind of interesting to think last year I was at Independence Hall in Philadelphia, and while I was standing there sort of in awe trying to absorb what had happened there, the guide pointed out that most of the time George Washington wasn't in the room, because while these guys, these very intelligent men, were standing around trying to argue and work out the United States on paper, Washington was actually in the field killing people and turning it into a reality. That's, you know, he got his hands dirty. And so Washington, he sort of set the stage to take us, you know, out of basically serfdom to a self-governing body. Now we move almost or around 100 years later, 1865, Abraham Lincoln was shot. Abraham Lincoln, of course, played a major role in realizing this concept of a nation that's free for everybody by, of course, the role he played in freeing the slaves. And then we take and we look, say, about 100 years into the future, 1963, that's, of course, when John F. Kennedy was shot. And John F. Kennedy was the president who came along and said, look, we are ready to actually leave the earth. We are ready to take the freedom and the power and the vision of this country. We're going to go to the moon. We're going to go to the moon. We're going to go beyond. And this, of course, if you look back, seems to be the ultimate agenda to create a free society, a truly free society that can actually go so far as to leave the earth and to start again bringing us closer to that type one civilization where we are in harmony with our solar system. Now, in June of 2010, President Obama released his National Space Policy of the United States. And of course, one of the most surprising things about that is that it stated that from here on out, we're going to rely solely on launch vehicles designed, manufactured, and operated by private aerospace companies. So what that means is that for the first time, we're taking this giant leap, the idea that we can actually use the power of a free society that's going to explore space and go beyond, and we're going to take that out of the hands of people who were elected and put that technology and that power and that permission in the hands of private citizens. Oh boy, this gets to be a dangerous, tricky area, because when you do that, this is power that, if used properly, can take us off to our next glorious phase of human evolution, or if used improperly, it could be used for terrible, selfish purposes, and we could obliterate ourselves and destroy everything. And that's why I think that some of these key presidents, again, like Washington, like Lincoln, like Kennedy, are interested in watching what's happening right now.
They're probably cringing, Josh.
Well, if they're watching the same news programs that you and I are, they might be, yeah. And then that's always the question. You wonder how much of what's being presented is an indication of what is real versus what's being sensationalized. But that's why I believe that you're going to find so much more of this spiritual activity surrounding these presidents and this day and age, because they want to know, were their sacrifices worth it? They gave up a lot in their lives that we can hardly even relate to nowadays. And so I believe that they want to see, especially the earliest founders, was this in vain, or are we going to make the right decisions at this time to push us forward? And there's a lot of pressure on us to make the right decisions.
It seems to me, because Joel Martin has written a book about ghosts at the White House and of the presidents, there seems to be some kind of urgency with these ghostly presidents to try to convey some message to us. Do you sense that?
Oh, I absolutely do. And as a matter of fact, you know, I was talking with Lisa Molden, the lady who captured this amazing photograph of what we believe is the ghost of George Washington. And she has all kinds of experiences where she believes she has channeled messages from the president. And she told me, hey, they are more agitated and nervous than they've ever been. And, you know, I can definitely tell you that I do not have some kind of an ability, or I've never had the experience, where a president has materialized and has said, Joshua, here is a message that I have for you to give to the world. You know, that's never occurred. But look at what we're talking about right now on the radio, based upon the fact that this apparitional form was just captured a few months ago. It's almost like that these spiritual beings, if you will, they might not be able to show up and go on CNN and give their opinion about, you know, the state of affairs and what should be done. But I believe by appearing, especially at certain times in front of certain people, they are actually making us think about the historic context of the country, and they are stimulating a new angle of conversation, which is important for us right now to consider, hey, what were they trying to accomplish? And granted, these were very imperfect men, these founders, but the process they put in place has given us a great country, and it's up to us to have these proper conversations now inspired by the spirit of those sacrifices they made.
Hey, Josh, there's so many things have been going on this planet recently. People just seem to be topsy-turvy with these events. But back to the ghosts, and the ghosts generally, not only just the presidents, but just everything. It seems to really be heating up these days. I mean, do you sense that as a paranormal investigator?
Yeah, I absolutely do. And in fact, I think it's because that we literally are going through a phase in which the relationship between the physical and non-physical dimensions is changing a bit. What I mean by that is scientists have now proven, Nobel Prizes have been awarded, because the universe is actually accelerating as it expands. And so when you get in your car and you gradually push the accelerator, as you go faster, the bumps become more noticeable. And if you're on a bumpy road, well, you may even get to the point to where one bump reinforces the other, and you go through these much more pronounced moments where you feel the impact. And so as our universe accelerates, we go through cycles where certain parts of the physical and spiritual world are more what you might call in phase or out of phase. You can look at it like two sine waves that are sort of slithering next to each other, and sometimes they meet up and sometimes they go apart. And so we're going through a stage right now, I believe, in which as a part of this acceleration, the physical and the spiritual world are merging a little more closely together. And it's great because we have this technology now that's helping us to capture these things better than ever. You know, I haven't been able to do any great analysis on it yet, but you've got a picture on your website there, Coast to Coast AM, of a full-bodied apparition standing at the top of the stairs at the Stanley Hotel, for example.
Oh, yeah, that was a great picture indeed. Hey, so I'm in Cincinnati last weekend, and a guy comes up to me and says, hey, I work with Joshua Warren. And I'm going, oh, really? I know most of the people who work with Joshua Warren. I don't know you. And he said, no, my name is Brad, and I make the wishing machines for him. And there you go. So great guy.
You know, I'm so happy that you got to meet him, because there are people out there who don't believe he exists.
He's real. He's the real deal.
He's a real flesh and blood man. And the reason is, you know, Dr. Mulder is the name that we use for him usually in the press, because he enjoys his privacy.
Yes.
And you can imagine when word gets out that you make wishing machines, well, you're going to have people beating a pathway to your door and crawling in your windows wanting you to fulfill a wish. And so, you know, Dr. Mulder is what we call him, but he's a real man. He's a great engineer. He's a fantastic, very charismatic person, as you saw, who really enjoys helping people and, you know, making their dreams come true. And it's funny because at this point we have now shipped thousands of these wishing machines around the world. We keep track of people. We ask them to fill out surveys, and we find that not only are people in all cultures around the world having enormous success with these wishing machines, whether they're using them for the normal stuff like trying to improve their finances or their relationships or whatever, but people are using them also for paranormal experiments all the time. And I've gotten to the point now, if I'm going to go somewhere and do an investigation at a really rare special spot, I will take a wishing machine and I will actually program it at that time to enhance the activity. So, you know, I mentioned before, and in fact it was in my report, that I wrote a letter to President Obama asking to go into the White House and do the first ghost investigation.
Did you get a reply?
I did not.
No, I didn't think so.
Yeah, and because I was able to take a nice tour of the White House in 2011, so I've been inside. I have full clearance and all that sort of thing. But to go into the Lincoln bedroom and to do a ghost investigation, that takes you know, special permission. So I wrote a letter, and I didn't get a reply. I think I wrote that letter in 2012. And so now I have turned around, and I have written another letter to the president, because this fall is going to be his last fall in the White House.
That's right.
And I figured...
As president, he might show up as an invited guest.
Right, yeah. So this fall, close to Halloween time, when it's acceptable to dig into spooky things, would be a perfect time for the president to just give me a few hours to go into the Lincoln bedroom with some basic bits of gear and instrumentation and do an investigation. And so you can imagine, if the president actually allowed me to do that, and honestly, I can't think of a person more qualified to do that, because I've already investigated the North Carolina State Capitol building, which is on the History Channel. I've done investigations of governor's mansions, etc. If I got that opportunity, knowing how rare that opportunity is, knowing how limited my time would be, obviously I would take a wishing machine, and I would set that wishing machine so that whatever ghostly activity is there would be enhanced while I was there. And so if people don't understand how this technology works, well, don't feel alone. None of us knows exactly how it works, but on my website there, joshuapwarren.com, you can watch videos and learn more about it. But, you know, I think it's important for us to realize that people are having better results in general manifesting strange activity, manifesting wishes, and it's because, George, in my opinion, ever since 2012 in particular, this sort of divide between the mind and the body and the environment has become less and less, and it's become sort of more and more compressed. We're working...
Yeah. They've meshed together.
Yeah. Yeah, we certainly have, and that's why also, I heard Peter Davenport giving his report, and he was saying it's incredible how many of these UFOs are being seen now, but they're not getting mainstream media attention so much. One of the reasons is that, ironically, as we get the technology to document or you know, more of these things, we also have the technology out there to hoax these things or to confuse us. I mean, how many people are running around out there with drones right now, and how difficult does that make it to tell the difference between fact and fiction? Some of these areas of the paranormal, they're picking up, but it's more difficult for us to study them and define what they are because we have so much background noise. But when it comes to ghostly phenomena, you know, when Lisa Molden sent me this picture she took of what we believe is George Washington's ghost, I said, after I talked to her in person, and I said, look, send me the original file. She sent me that original file. We were able to go in and look at that information on that picture, and we were able to tell exactly when she took it down to the second.
Well, that's critical. I mean, and that's what you do, and you do that very well. We're coming back. We're going to talk more with Joshua Warren about the ghostly realm and take your phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.